We are back. We are proud to bring you U.S. Representative Dennis Kucinich from Ohio. He used to be known as the boy wonder of Ohio politics, Cleveland City Councilman at age 23, mayor at 31. Kucinich gained quite a bit of national publicity for being the youngest big city mayor in American history. He governed as a populist, ran up against some vested interests, and found himself in the political wilderness after being defeated for re-election. He has been returned to the state Senate and now the U.S. Congress, where he served for four terms. He is currently offering some interesting new ideas among the field of Democrats seeking the presidential nomination in 2004. Joining us at Radio Parallax from Washington, D.C. is Congressman Dennis Kucinich. Thank you for coming on the program.
You bet.
Congressman, you have been an outspoken opponent of the war on Iraq. You've appeared on national television against Richard Perle, the administration's foremost hawk, and quite unlike Senators Gephardt, Lieberman, Kerry, and Edwards, you voted against giving the Bush administration a free hand to attack. You said the war in Iraq was wrong and would make us less safe, not more secure. What do we do now in Iraq?
The first thing that we do is we involve the international community. The United States made a mistake in ignoring the Security Council. The war that we waged against Iraq was illegal. It was a violation of our own United States Constitution. It was a violation of the UN Charter. And in my opinion, it violated the Geneva Convention. What we have now is chaos in Iraq. And it's going to take quite a while for the conditions to be settled, because what we did with the bombing and with the ousting of the government was to create a situation conducive to anarchy with widespread looting and crime, and it's going to be very difficult to be able to create structures which can help stabilize that government, particularly when you have so many different groups that are vying for power. So I don't think that the United States is going to be able to handle this alone, and it's going to be imperative that we involve the world community in the decisions, as well as involving the world community in protecting the resources of the country of Iraq for the people of Iraq.
As president, how would you approach al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups?
Well, there's no question that we have an obligation to provide for the protection of our country, and the only way to do that is to work with the world community. Our failure to work with the world community has been the cause of a significant amount of trouble for the United States, and has in effect empowered al-Qaeda. There is a story out of the Toronto Star which says that the Iraq war helped to boost al-Qaeda and allowed the network to recruit, according to experts. And lead is instructive, because what it says is the U.S.-led war in Iraq gave al-Qaeda the opportunity to reinvigorate its weakened terrorist network with new recruits and more funding, say experts on terrorism. This is a May 20th story out of the Toronto Star. My concern has been that the attack in Iraq would simply end up being a recruiting poster for Osama bin Laden. And as a result, we're now getting experts in terrorism basically substantiating that. The United States cannot have a policy which calls for us to attack any nation at will. The idea of preemption sets us apart from the world community. We need to work once again with the Security Council on matters of international security. When we ignored the Security Council and went on our own attacking Iraq, a nation which had not attacked us, we created a great difficulty, because by going it alone, we basically had to pay for it alone. We're stuck alone. Now, I reject totally the basis for war against Iraq. But on any international matter, you have to have cooperation. The United States must renounce doctrines of preemption and first strike. So as President of the United States, I'd work for security in this nation and among all nations through international cooperation and tracking down all those who would do harm to people, innocent people anywhere, and in working through an international system of justice to support the International Criminal Court and make it possible for people who are international terrorists to be tried in such a court.
out here in California, we're still smarting over a contrived energy crisis a couple of years ago, resulted from companies like Enron manipulating the energy markets. When you were mayor of Cleveland, you resisted an attempt by power interests to force the sale of the public electric utility, and you paid a heavy price for that politically. I think this is of great interest to Californians. And could you review a bit what happened in Ohio back in the 1980s?
On December 15, 1978, I was in just beginning my second year as mayor of Cleveland. On that day, the largest bank in Ohio, Cleveland Trust, came to me and demanded that I sell the city's municipal electric system to a utility monopoly in which the bank had a substantial financial interest. The bank said that if I did not sell the municipal electric system, a system whose existence I actually campaigned for mayor on, if I did not sell this system, that they would not renew the city's credit on loans that were taken out by my predecessor. The bank was trying to force the city to give up its publicly owned system, which had provided the people with cheap electricity, and was using tactics that were actually illegal. I refused the sale. The bank put the city of Cleveland into default, and I lost the next election. But we saved the electric system. 15 years later, the city of Cleveland embarked on the largest expansion of any electric system in the country. When that happened, people in Cleveland suddenly decided that I'd done the right thing, and I had spent the better part of the previous 15 years out of public life and unable to win any major office. This moment gave me a chance to have a comeback. So in 1994, I was elected to the state Senate on a slogan, "Because it was right," little light bulb behind my name. In 96, I was elected to the United States Congress with a sun raised behind my name saying, "Light up Congress."
In 1998, I understand the Cleveland Council passed a commendation for you, citing that you'd saved citizens perhaps $200 million over the previous decade.
Well, I've received a lot of commendations for taking the stand to protect municipal electric system from this privatization. But what it ends up being is how corporate power can try to impose its will against the public interest. And I had a test. My test was whether or not I was willing to take a stand to challenge this effort to for a utility monopoly to steal the city's municipal electric system with the help of a bank. Or, you know, and my career was clearly on the line. I chose to protect the public interest. I'm mindful of the fact that California has paid dearly because utility monopoly had control over the federal government and that used its influence in the federal government to be able to move with impunity to jack up rates by a factor of 3, 4, and 5 times to cause California to run up huge budget deficits, to really take billions of dollars from the people of the state. You know, I've met the test, and I can meet it as president, and I can deal with the Enrons and the Halliburtons and the Bechtels of the world and understand that there's a higher purpose that business must have, and that is to work cooperatively to assure free and fair exchange of commerce without monopolies and without price gouging, and with the government serving as a referee and a regulator at all times appropriate.
You've said that you'd like to see a federal corporation charter to define the rights and responsibilities of corporations operating in the U.S. How would that work?
Ideally, corporations should have, in writing, a list of responsibilities as a condition of their being in business. And those responsibilities should be to their stockholders, to the general public. The responsibilities should include being honest with pricing and with their books. It should include making sure that the corporation discloses to the community what kind of environmental hazards are attendant. That if there's any and if there's any sharp business practices which end up hurting the general public, that corporation should have to be or should be subject to severe penalties. Today, with corporations amassing so much power, only if their very right to do business is at stake, can we see the level of accountability which will then keep our corporate engines community spirited? So the idea of federal chartering of corporations derives from a thinking that we need to be the masters of our corporate entities. In a democracy, when corporations become the master, it makes it very difficult to be able to maintain democratic principles.
Trade issues are figuring prominently in your campaign. You oppose NAFTA and the efforts to get fast-track trade agreements by a president without Congress's approval. What do you see as the problems with NAFTA?
Well, I've seen communities devastated when a factory closes and moves in search of low wages, in search of climates which do not support workers' rights or which do not have strong environmental standards. NAFTA has been responsible for communities being crushed when a factory shuts down. It's been responsible for breadwinners being devastated, for homes being broken, for dreams being dashed. NAFTA has resulted in the loss of hundreds of thousands of manufacturing jobs. Our trade policies generally have cost the United States millions of jobs. One of my first acts in office will be to cancel NAFTA and to return to bilateral trade, which would be conditioned on workers' rights, human rights, and on the environment. In that way, we can raise up the level of economic and social justice using trade as a very powerful tool to do that. Currently, trade is being used to facilitate a race to the bottom and to facilitate an exodus of jobs from so many communities in the United States. I want to change that.
You've now served in local, state, and federal government positions, and I gather you're concerned quite a bit about challenges from global trade organizations to regulations such as environmental regulations that we enact here in the U.S.
Well, the World Trade Organization has determined that certain provisions of law end up being inconsistent with the WTO. And I'm very concerned that we always protect our environment. When you consider that the WTO has been used as a, currently is being used as a device to attack municipal ownership, we have to raise questions about whether or not the WTO serves the public interest any longer. The WTO is being used to advance an argument that says that the existence of municipal water systems constitute an unfair competitive advantage to global companies which market water. This is a serious matter because the home rule principle, which animates local government and gives dignity to people in local communities and democratic control over their government, is under attack when international corporations would even think that they somehow have a primary claim on the resources of a community's basic utilities, such as water. As president, I would serve to cancel the United States' relationship with the WTO and restructure it so as to assure that the basic rights of governance in this country and sovereignty are protected. The WTO cannot be used as a vehicle by which Americans give up their home rule, their sovereignty, their ability to control their own destiny.
Your website has just about the most concise list of international treaties that the U.S. is refusing to honor or ratify that I've seen, and there's 10 listed on your website, which I should mention is www.kucinich.us. Would you have the U.S. sign and honor all or most of these?
Well, on international policy, first of all, I want to say that my worldview is holistic. I look at the world as an undivided whole. I see the world as interconnected and interdependent. And because I look at the world this way, I think it's mandatory to be able to engage leaders around the world who are seeking international cooperation, which is really the basis for holding the world up. International cooperation means that the United States would necessarily turn away from policies of unilateralism, of preemption, of a sense that we somehow have a right to first strike use of nuclear weapons, and instead turn to reaffirming the purpose of the United Nations and the Charter of the United Nations, which in its first instance is to forever put aside war, I believe that the United States can lead the way to a new era where we reclaim our rightful role as the leader in nuclear disarmament by confirming the purpose of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, by stopping the production of new nuclear weapons, by foregoing this commitment to the use of to nuclear first strike, by reinstituting the ABM Treaty, by renegotiating with Russia in the START 2 and START 3 treaties, by working for, once again, putting in place the test ban, and by cooperating with the world community in getting rid of all nuclear weapons. The United States has much work to do in creating a new structure of international law, beginning with participating in the International Criminal Court, in the Biological Weapons Convention, the Chemical Weapons Convention, the Small Arms Treaty, the Landmines Treaty, the Kyoto Climate Change Treaty. There is so much work to be done in building a structure for international cooperation, and the United States ought to be leading the way. We should not be standing aside while the world moves on and cooperates. We need to work with the world community to make America safer, to make the world safer, and as president, that would be my aspiration.
In the United States, the news media seems more concentrated than ever, and as of June 2nd, apparently the FCC will likely further weaken our protection against a few media corporations controlling major markets. Is reversing this trend a priority for you?
Yes, the democratization of our news media is something that we need to pay close attention to. As wealth concentrates in fewer and fewer hands, the democracy is compromised. As media influence concentrates in fewer and fewer hands, the ability for open dialogue in a society becomes limited. The Federal Communications Act of 1934 ordered that the electronic media be created in the public interest, convenience, and necessity. That really is the charge of the electronic media according to the 1934 Federal Communications Act. How far we've strayed from that promise. We now are in a place where we have just a few major media corporations which have enormous influence on our public dialogue. As President of the United States, I would move to break up the media monopolies. I think it's important to make sure that competition exists for ideas, for different points of view, and the existence of a Federal Communication Commission, which permits the media to be concentrated, only does violence to the original purpose and intent of the Federal Communications Act. My role as president will be to have a robust debate in this country, which can come about through more competitive media outlets, which can come about through an executive order which would instruct the electronic media to provide free television access to all federal candidates. So much time is spent by candidates raising money for federal campaigns that the corporations whose influence is felt in the political fundraising process become even more powerful because candidates have to raise a substantial amount of money just to go on television. My role as president will be to encourage the fullest expression of the First Amendment and to make sure that we empower communities to participate in local cable, to have more programming, and also to have more of a say in the broadcast media in their own community. We've had a narrowing of the discussion in this country, and it's really been damaging to our democratic institutions. I hope to change that.
Well, Congressman Kucinich, we wish you the best in your quest for the Democratic nomination. I know that your messages, I think, are going to resonate in Northern California, and I know the California primary is quite important to your mission.
Well, the people of California really have a chance to set a whole new agenda for America. And actually, I think that's why my campaign's been resonating so powerfully in California, because people recognize that I'm settling for nothing less than profound transformational change in our government, that we can make this democracy work. That's the whole nature of our democracy, that people can, through the principle of self-government, create a structure which is relevant to their needs. I hope to make America a country which values freedom, which understands the importance of individual liberties. I'll work to set aside the Patriot Act. I'll work to make sure our country's respected abroad by stopping policies of aggressive war. I'll work to make sure the American people always know the truth about our foreign policies and put aside this idea that somehow people can be driven by fear into accepting policies that otherwise they would never accept. We need a country which not only tells the truth to the people, but which inspires people to find their own best potential and to help each other as a nation become something better and become more than we are, to evolve as a people. We have such great capacities in this country. We only need to reach inside of ourselves and to have a climate of freedom which permits each person to become the best they can be. As President of the United States, I hope to have a chance to help facilitate that process.
Well, looking ahead in November, one final quick question I would have for you. Assuming you get the nomination and there's a questionable outcome in the Electoral College, like Campaign 2000 in Florida, how would you pursue a challenge to the outcome differently than Al Gore did?
Let me tell you something. My goal is to have such a broad coalition of people come to the polls that it's not even going to be close, and that's what we need to do. We need to reach out to Americans in every state and say, let's go for deep change. Let's reclaim the dream of our founders for a government which really has the possibilities of enlightened self-government. I think that we are at a moment in human history where the advancing tide is towards human unity. We can unite in this country to create a new world, and we can unite in the world to create a new destiny for the world.
Congressman Kucinich will be in the area on Monday, May 26th. We'd like to give you his schedule, which you also can get at www.kucinich.us. From 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Monday, he will be at the Grass Valley Center for the Arts in Grass Valley. 4 to 6 p.m., the congressman will be here at the Varsity Theater in Davis. From 7 to 9 p.m., there'll be a town hall meeting at the Sacramento State University Union Ballroom, 6000 J Street, Sacramento.
And anybody who has a chance to come to any of the events, it'd be great to see you there. I think we'll probably have it posted on our website as well at kucinich.us. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you. We'll see you out here. Bye-bye.
You bet. Bye.
For your listeners here in Davis, the Varsity Theater at 616 2nd Street is very easy to get to. I would suggest very strongly you go out and hear what the congressman has to say. On the radio, I'm proud to announce that KDVS is scooping the big 50,000 AM voice of KGO Radio, but Congressman Kucinich will be appearing again tomorrow night, Friday, May 23rd, on the Bernie Ward program from 10 o'clock to 10:30 p.m. I'm Douglas Everett. You're listening to Radio Parallax here on KDVS 90.3 FM. Let's take a short break.